Previously on the All About Daredevil podcast.
Netflix has never seen a long-running television series yet. It's still kind of in its infancy. And so there's really no way to gauge how Netflix would do things. We don't know if they have a different business model than like regular television. And the idea that Disney is starting its own streaming service, it just further complicates the matter, and it just makes it hard for us to pin down. But I mean, who knows? Those Netflix shows may, you know, Disney may say, you know, you're only going to this point, and then that's it. No more on Netflix. You know, you're coming over to our side. They may continue the show, or maybe they'll do it over with a new cast and all that sort of stuff. So who knows who's gonna put the order in to stop it.
If somebody can deliver a performance like that to where you buy into the emotionality, you don't have to see the flashback because it's all on his face.
You bitched.
Why wasn't Bullseye involved in season two, you might say? Well, you know, I really think he's only going to be a part of one season.
He comes back and says the hand is coming. The hand is coming. You need to get your stuff
shit together.
This is episode 10, and I am your host, the Daredevil Prophet. And it has been far too long since my last confession, right? I mean, it has been forever since I've been able to do an episode, and I'm just so glad to be back at the helm to bring you more Daredevil fandom content, because I definitely am one of Daredevil's biggest fans, I would say. This year has been really, really crazy. The last few months have been crazy. But definitely for me in my life, I've gone through a lot of personal changes in my life. And that has included how I record. I've had to reinvent what I do behind the scenes. And it was like a phoenix. You know, I had to rise again. You know, I had to start from the bottom, start from scratch. But I think now I'm in a point where I can do more episodes, I can do them more efficiently, and they can fit around my new life. And so I'm just so glad to be back with you to provide more Daredevil fandom content at a time right now where we're smack dab in the middle of this whole waiting period. And in a lot of ways, this is really the crossroads. This is where the crossroads meet for a lot of Daredevil stuff. This is the epicenter that will decide a lot of things for Daredevil in the future. It starts right now, and I'm going to get into that with you. We're going to talk a little bit about where we could see Daredevil in the future, because that's what I definitely love to do. I'm very forward-thinking, and I definitely like to place my predictions there. But what I want to do first is I want to catch you up and throw some appreciation at what has gone on in the last year, the last 2 years, and to just catch you up on where I left off on episode 9. So episode 9, that was the season 3 primer episode, and so I didn't get to do another episode after season 3 until now. As you know, a lot of things have happened the day that season 3 was released, and even a little bit before that. So the first thing that everybody sees is that Iron Fist gets canceled sort of out of the blue, sort of not, but season 2 for Iron Fist had come out. It was a shorter season. It did its thing. It was an improvement over season 1, and it was canceled. And nobody batted an eye. I think a lot of people were just kind of like, well, we knew that was coming. I mean, nobody was really surprised. And I had the same reaction as well. But, you know, based off of stuff that I put on previous episodes, you know, I thought that this was sort of the beginning of the consolidation, the beginning of Iron Fist and Luke Cage being on one show to make the Heroes for Hire show. I really believe that that's what they were aiming for at the time, since Iron Fist was the first one to go. But if Iron Fist never came back, I don't think anybody would have minded. You know, there's a lot of comments and tweets and all that stuff that are out there that were just like good riddance to Iron Fist. I think Iron Fist was a little bit better than that, but I can definitely understand where they were coming from. So that happens. Nobody bats an eye. What happens next was really the thing that kind of shook the grounds for all of us who are fans of all the Defender characters. Season 3 of Daredevil comes out, and simultaneously it's announced that Luke Cage is canceled, him just coming out with his last season. And that's when everyone started to worry and really think that something is up. And if Iron Fist is canceled and Luke Cage is canceled, there's no Heroes for Hire. You know, they're not bringing them back. They are just cut down. They're canceled. They're gone. And the way that it happened, them announcing it during the premiere of Daredevil Season 3, I mean, I wasn't even done watching the season yet, and they hit us with that news. It really put a damper on Daredevil Season 3 release, and it really made it hard to watch. I remember I had difficulty watching it because, like, there was that cancellation threat in the back of my mind for Daredevil as well. But lo and behold, it came to be shortly thereafter. All of our worst fears were realized, and, you know, a few days, a few weeks later, Daredevil was canceled, and that was it. You know, we knew that Jessica Jones and the Punisher were next, and we knew that was it. That was going to be the end. It was a really, really kind of confusing, daunting thing to try and make sense of or to kind of accept. And it was something that not a lot of people saw coming. I know that, you know, these cancellations kind of rolled out pretty quickly, one right after the other. But really, if you kind of look back at it and you kind of look deeper at it, Iron Fist wasn't really the first show to get canceled. The first show to get canceled actually was The Defenders. And it wasn't an outright announcement of a cancellation, but it was a soft cancellation. Now, what happened with The Defenders is Netflix came out with season 1, didn't like the numbers, and I believe that they decided very, very early on that they were not going to do another Marvel team-up miniseries. They weren't going to do another Defenders. There wasn't going to be a Defenders Season 2 or anything like that. And I remember being contacted by a division of Netflix called NX. Now, NX was supposed to be a sort of geek-centric, you know, hero, sci-fi, you know, those kind of genres. It was supposed to be a division of those kind of shows. And I remember back in mid-September 2018, they DM'd me wanting to use some of the tweets that I had and wanting to put them in their promos or in some of their videos and stuff. And I said, yeah, sure, that's fine. You have my blessing. Go right ahead. And what I realized upon further examination is that when the NX social media pages started coming up, they were actually taking the place of the Defenders' social media pages. So they were using the same social media accounts, but they were switching the profile images or changing the name. So the Defenders' social media pages were no more. They were switched to NX. And this was sort of the very, very beginnings of sort of a whiff of Netflix wanting to eventually start to cancel all of these shows. But it's something that blew by everybody. Nobody noticed it. And I just happened to be aware of it just because they DM'd me really, really early on, right when they got started. And I never forgot that. You know, at the time, I looked at it like it was a cool thing, because that meant that Netflix was going to be devoting more attention to the Marvel shows and to all their other shows that were, you know, akin to those type of genres. But that really was sort of the first cancellation. It was very soft and it was very silent, like a hand ninja. But it really was the beginning, sort of pieces of little evidence that we could see that Netflix was not thrilled anymore about the union that they had with Marvel. And that was sort of the beginning of the end. That was the fulfillment of the first contract that they had for the original four Defenders to have their one seasons, and then for it to lead up to a Defenders. Anything outside of that is sort of outlier contracts and things like that. But Defenders was sort of the fulfillment of that original negotiation. They had really no obligation, or they were at their own crossroads at that time. How did they feel about the shows? Did they want to continue? I think that they wanted to explore the individual shows, but I think, and then we learned about the 2-year holding clause for all of these shows, Daredevil included. Now, where Daredevil is now is in the very middle, actually more in the second year. His 2-year cooling off period is going to end towards the end of this year in 2020. So this is very much wait and see for the next couple years. You know, the year that's passed and now the rest of the year that we have here, we're going to have to just hold it down and understand that we are going to have to wait, and I'll sort of get into that a little bit later. But the Defenders left a great and remarkable legacy, I think, for the short amount of time that it had. It left behind, I think, a few things that we can look back on that I think that we should throw some appreciation to. The first thing that kind of jumps out at me when I think of the Defenders, and when I say the Defenders, I'm really talking about the original core four characters. So this discussion doesn't really include the Punisher. The Punisher was off on his, you know, on the side. He did his thing. John Bernthal was great. But really, when I talk about the Defenders, I'm just talking about the core four characters that made up the Defenders limited series. Of the four characters, we had two shows actually starring minorities that were well received, you know, and I'm talking about Luke Cage, Jessica Jones. Those shows were based on the quality of how good the shows were. You know, it was judged off of the strength of its writing, its execution, all of that sort of stuff. They were well received. Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, they're up there in the top echelon of superhero television. You know, they're way up there. They're cream of the crop. Something like Iron Fist definitely rated terribly. You know, Daredevil is just so easy to write for, whether you're talking about movies or television. It doesn't matter. Sometimes you can have, you know, like the Daredevil movie was written poorly, executed poorly, but the Daredevil character just shines through so much that you still get the gist of the character and you still follow the character. Iron Fist, the show wasn't that fortunate, but one thing you can say is that each of these shows starring, you know, one female, three guys, you know, three white people, one black person, it, like, none of that mattered. Each of these shows were judged off of the strength of their respective shows and nothing else. Nothing else mattered, you know. And at the times that they were being released, you didn't really get a whole lot of backlash or anybody crying out for certain representation and stuff like that. It wasn't an issue. It wasn't a problem. And to me, that's real social justice. And that's a great legacy to have, because a lot of these shows and a lot of the movies definitely suffer from that kind of backlash. But the Defenders as a whole, all of these shows, you're talking about four shows, all with their different seasons going on, and the Defenders miniseries, like, and there's no issues regarding that. You know, that's really great, and I give a really, really I give a lot of credit to Jeff Loeb. I give a lot of credit to Joe Quesada. I give a lot of credit to Marvel for giving the reins to people who really care about these characters, and they were able to have the freedom to guide these characters in the direction that they thought best. And I think that had a huge impact, and I think it'll have a lasting impact, because there's something here for everyone, and it's true to each of their fan bases. You know, Luke Cage has its fans. Jessica Jones has its fans. Believe it or not, Iron Fist has its fans. But no matter what shows you will rewatch in the future, those shows are always going to sort of resonate with you in a way that doesn't have any of those sort of distractions of equal representation and PC, you know, being politically correct and all that sort of stuff. Like, none of that is an issue. When you're watching a show, you're watching pure, unadulterated, character-driven comic book material. And that's really great, you know, for it to be kind of like distilled water in a way. You know, it's just something that's a little bit more pure and less muddied by all of this other stuff. And I think that that's a really great thing. I think it lends itself to a better product. It's something that, you know, whether you own it physically or own it digitally over time, I think it's something that you can look back on with a fondness, and it sort of preserves it in a way. It makes it less dated and more timeless, because, you know, you're not necessarily dealing with tropes of the times or themes of the times. You're dealing with universal emotions and universal sort of individual character hang-ups and sort of the inner struggles that they all sort of go through. I think that's something that will stand the test of time. And I think that something else that'll stand the test of time is the costumes. Now, when you think about the best costumes, sometimes they come from TV shows, right? Like, I'm thinking about the Power Rangers. When you think about the Power Rangers, the costumes that you see in your head are not the ones from the movie, and they're not the ones from the later Power Rangers shows. You're thinking about the original TV show costumes, and those costumes are just simpler. They're straightforward, and they just have sort of that charm to them that, you know, when, if you're a collector, you know, that's what you want. You know, you don't want, you know, movie version Power Ranger memorabilia, right? You want the original TV show. And so it's kind of the same with the Defenders show. When you look at Daredevil, he was the only fully costumed hero in the Defenders. But you sort of had low-key iterations with Iron Fist and the Punisher. I suppose you could say that the Punisher was fully costumed. He had reached his costume peak, I suppose. But I think that they had a little bit more in mind for the Punisher. I really think that they were trying to bring in sort of an Agent Venom type of full suit, you know, full like Bomb Squad or like, you know, Riot Gear type of costume. I really think that they wanted to bring something like that to the Punisher character, but we never got there. And the same with Iron Fist as well. You know, we saw a few different takes on his costume, but they were sort of not fully realized the way that it was for Daredevil. We did see some interesting takes. We saw sort of his newer version of the costume, sort of the vintage take of the costume. But I don't think we ever really got like the full-fledged, this is the Netflix Iron Fist costume, quite like we did with Daredevil. Daredevil had the distinct privilege of having two pre-Daredevil costumes, which is the black costume, the black ninja costume, and two iterations of the red costume. And I think the thing that we can say for sure is they really did have more costume updates or different iterations of the costume in the works. You can definitely see that in season 3. I mean, there's a scene where Matt is talking to Bullseye, and he's got him on the phone, and he basically tells him, I'm coming back for my costume. I'm coming to claim it back. So the whole thing with that was going on with Daredevil in season three and his costume is that you have a killer pretending to be Daredevil, dressing as Daredevil, and as he's killing people in the Daredevil costume, he's smearing Daredevil's name. He's smearing Matt's persona, and Matt is sort of trying to find his way back to, you know, his mentally healthy self, physically healthy self. Like, he's been down for a long time, and he's still on the mend. And so while he's on the mend, you have this killer who is killing in Daredevil's name and is just completely shattering his reputation. And so I think what they wanted to do with that, if there was a season four, is they would see Daredevil go through a different version of the costume, maybe one with 2Ds. At this point, he's known as Daredevil, but he's still called the Devil of Hell's Kitchen. So he was called the Devil of Hell's Kitchen in season one. By the end of season one, he dresses like a devil. By the end of season one, also simultaneously, is he's called Daredevil in the newspaper. So it's sort of a pinnacle for Matt dressing up as a devil, because he's known as the Devil of Hell's Kitchen. But at the same time, it sort of plants the seed for him being called Daredevil in the papers, and the public knows him as Daredevil. So even though he doesn't have the 2Ds, he's still known as Daredevil. But I think that what we would have saw is we would have saw a different version of the costume, another update to it in season four that would have included the 2Ds. And it would have had more red, less black in it. I think it would have been closer to the sort of traditional Daredevil costume that we see in the comics and that he's sort of known for. I think that that's kind of where they were leaning. I think that's what they were setting up. But that's something that's going to be left on the table. We're always going to be left wondering about something like that. But they were definitely planting seeds for that, and I think that that would have taken place if Daredevil would have continued. So Daredevil, Iron Fist, Punisher, we had not seen the end of what costumes they had planned for them. And that's something that we'll never know. But what we did get with Daredevil is just something that is something where if he was called up to the big leagues, if he was in Civil War, if he was in any of the Avengers, you can throw him in any of those movies with the costume that he has already. And it would have looked consistent. It wouldn't have looked out of place. You know, he has a lot of cues from the Ant-Man costume, actually. Ant-Man's kind of looks really similar to Daredevil in a weird sort of way. Different characters, and so they have different fabrics going on, different color schemes, different tones, definitely all that. But there's definitely a Marvel look to the Daredevil costume. An MCU look that I think will be in people's minds for a really long time. At least until they reinvent it and they introduce him back. That's definitely something that I'm looking forward to. But definitely don't have any shame having any of the MCU, Netflix, Daredevil statues that I have in my house. It's a really, really great design, and I think that that will stand the test of time as well. The last thing that comes to mind when I think of the Defenders and the legacy that they leave behind is that everyone tried to duplicate the success of the MCU movies, the tie-in event. You know, DC tried to do this with their movies. They did it completely backwards, and execution was a mess. Editing was a mess. Just didn't pan out as well as they hoped. They didn't lay the groundwork for all of their characters. So it really rubbed people the wrong way. I think you have the DC shows, actually, that culminated in the Crisis on Infinite Earths event. That was kind of cool and interesting. It wasn't an event so much as it taking place on different people's shows, the event taking place on different people's shows. So it was sort of displaced. There was a ton of cameos. You know, I would say that Crisis on Infinite Earths is probably the best place to do that. But they kind of went overboard on the cameos. When you sort of take those away, what really are you left with? You know, you have a few cool moments, but I mean, to what effect did that have? You know, like you had all of these sort of characters that were from different shows and even at different networks at a certain point, different tones, different storylines, all just sort of jumbled together to make this big, like, I don't know, this meat pie, you know, this sort of mesh of just all these different things that were just sort of squeezed together. You know, when you take those cameos away and you strip it down and you look at what the story is, what really do you have at the end of the day? And I'd say probably not much. So the Netflix shows definitely came closest to replicating that MCU model. Netflix definitely pulled it off until the very end. They kind of stumbled a little bit, but, you know, I don't think anybody is going to be able to replicate the massive success and the massively high reception of the MCU and what they were able to do with their characters and then bring them together for an Avengers event. I mean, my God, they did it three times, three phases, and they've all led up to an Avengers event, and everybody loves it. It's the pinnacle of superhero movies, and I don't know if it'll ever be topped. I don't know if it can ever be topped. I don't even know if it can be topped by Marvel themselves. So Netflix, for what it was able to do in the format that it was in, definitely came the closest. And not DC, not their movies, not their shows, nothing else from Marvel Television. Nothing came close than the Defenders. All right, so I want to start to talk about where we could see Daredevil in the future. This is going to be a really tough one, but I want to start to lay the groundwork, and I don't really have a lot of predictions because the more I try to look into my crystal ball, the more I try to put two and two together, the more I realize that it's just such an open field. Now that Daredevil is done at Netflix, now that he's in the MCU, back in Kevin Feige's hands, we really don't know how or where he could be implemented, when he could be implemented. I mean, every question that you can have, I have. You know, I have so many questions and not a whole lot to go off of at this point. You know, again, we're at a cooling off stage here, so we're not supposed to hear anything. Everything that we've been hearing are rumors at this point, and they're rumors that haven't really panned out. I'll get into that in a second. But there are some things that we can go off of, and if there is one thing that I can point to that gives me confidence, it's Avengers Endgame. Avengers Endgame was really something that I saw. It's definitely one that I like to rewatch. I just love the conclusion of it. It's the end point for a lot of the Marvel characters that started the MCU, and it was a really good last chapter for characters like Captain America, Tony Stark. They could be back, but it was a good closing of their main sort of storyline, and them being the focal point of the Avengers and of the MCU. They're no longer in the center of that, and it's time for other characters to take over. So I think it was a good way to end a lot of the character storylines. But in a lot of ways, the sort of genius about Endgame is that it was also a starting point for a lot of characters as well. And, you know, you sort of see the seeds being planted for shows that were immediately announced on Disney Plus, you know, with WandaVision, with Falcon and the Winter Soldier. All of these shows were sort of set up in Endgame. Hawkeye as well is another really big one that was set up, because the opening scene involves Hawkeye, and he goes through a really, really big journey in the movie. So I think it sets up the things that were immediately announced, but I think it also low-key starts to plow the field and starts to set up shows that will come about in the future that haven't been announced, and sort of the overall direction that I think Marvel is going in phase 4 and beyond. And I think about a scene like when they were exploring the time travel at Avengers headquarters, and they're all sort of in lockdown there together. And there's just this sort of lighthearted tone. It's really one of the few scenes in the film where you can have levity, where you could sort of have a lightheartedness. And the way that it's written, these characters really are taking advantage of enjoying each other's company. And, you know, they're sort of coming in and out, and, you know, Ant-Man is there with his tacos and he can't catch a break because he can't eat them. It's just this really, really sort of lighthearted, warm tone, this warm moment. There's comedic chops in there. And I think that stuff like that was intentional, because we've been hearing that that the sort of next generation of Avengers, and I'm not talking about Black Panther, Captain Marvel, Doctor Strange, Fantastic Four, X-Men. I'm not talking about those characters. I'm talking about the young Avengers that are sort of coming up. I think that when you look at a scene like that, it totally sets up the tone for the young Avengers. Squirrel Girl, like if she pops up, like we've been hearing. And so a scene like that sets the tone for the Marvel future way, way down the line, down the road. I think a scene with Hawkeye dressed as Ronin similarly sets up a different type of tone that we're definitely going to see in the future of the MCU. Now, when we first see Hawkeye after the snap, you know, he's killing people in Asian territories. He's dressed up as the Ronin. He's got a sword, like he's drawing blood. And the scene, when you watch the scene, what you see is stunt work. You see nighttime, you see rain, you see back alleys, you see ground level stuff, grounded action. Like when you take a look at a scene like that, you definitely get a sense, I definitely get a sense that they're definitely setting up ground level type of tones that they might want to take advantage of in the near future. I mean, at this point, we know that Blade is coming. We know that Moon Knight is coming. Semi-street level, but also an element of supernatural magic and all that sort of stuff. This definitely makes a point to specifically set up that brand of Marvel material coming up. So the biggest hope that I have right now that you can definitively point to is a scene like that where there's no super heroics, there's just heroics. And that's completely Daredevil and all of these ground level heroes. I definitely think that that was intentional. I definitely think that they had a scene like that because they wanted to establish where they might be going next. And they definitely planted the seed there with that scene. And it's small, but it's real. It's concrete. It's canon. It's canon that, you know, in the Black Widow movie, it's going to be fantastical. You know, she's going to be falling from hundreds of feet up, you know, and it's presumed that she has sort of a super soldier serum thing going on. So she might be super powered in a way. It explains a lot if you watch the Avengers films. But Hawkeye definitely isn't. And so to see him just fighting as a mere mortal, a mere man, definitely gives me hope of what's to come in the future concerning our devilish hero. All right, so I want to get into a couple of things here. The state of the character and the state of the rights. So I want to address where Daredevil is now. Again, just laying the groundwork here because this is kind of important if they want to sort of continue. We know that the way that Marvel sort of does things, they don't usually like to repeat stuff that's been done before. You know, they're not going to do a reboot, kind of like Sony rebooting Spider-Man again and again and again, and them starting from his origins. You know, Batman's had his origins told I don't know how many times. So I want to start to establish where he is, because I think that we can look at that and understand where they might go with him next based off of sort of what came before. So with the state of the character, I want to address a few things, like what kind of iterations will we see of him, and where he sort of is. So by the end of season 3, Matt reconciled his vigilante, his lawyer, and his religious side, all three of those sides that tend to be in conflict with one another. He sort of found a way to bring those three aspects of his life together in a harmonious way. And he has sort of become more one with himself. He sort of understands the beauty of his character and the beauty of his diverse sort of aspects of his life, this sort of trichotomy that he has, where all these different aspects seem to be in conflict with one another. He really comes to a point to where he understands that he can utilize all of these different aspects of himself to really make a difference in people's lives and in the lives of the citizens of Hell's Kitchen. And then the snap happened. So I believe, and what I would roll with, if you want sort of my take on what happened after season 3, I would say that he got snapped out of existence. I think that that's a real factor, and I think that you can use that. I believe that it's very possible that when we see a Daredevil season 4 or a Daredevil cameo or a Daredevil movie, that will be a big element of where he's been, and it'll be a footnote of his backstory. I definitely do think that writers will utilize the snap to explain where he's been all this time. And I think that would be a smart way to go. I have no problems with that. But yeah, I do believe that he was snapped out of existence. You know, you think about it, he had already been a recluse for the entirety of season 3. He was just weird with his friends. He was distant, just not in a healthy place in his life, questioning everything about his life and showing that he kind of had a death wish at that point. He was at a very, very low point in Daredevil season 3. And it just seems fitting that he would be completely alone, completely disappear, you know, with the snap, and then embark on a completely new road and sort of reset all the things that were in motion in his life. Just sort of let all of that fall away. You know, he can relocate to like San Fran or something, do some pro bono work, and then come back to New York and he's helping Spider-Man on trial, or, you know, he's helping out the Avengers, or, you know, he's on retainer for the Avengers or something like that. You know, I think that would be really great, because it sort of resets the character to where now you have the liberty and the freedom to write him any way that Marvel sees fit to put him in with the larger MCU. And I think that that's something that will be a really, really cool thing, that it would be a part of his backstory. And it'll sort of be a launching pad of like, well, okay, he got buried by a building and nearly died, and then he questioned everything about his life, and then he got snapped out of existence. And then he came back, and then he sort of reset his life. He was he's sort of a vagabond at this point. And now he's back. He's more centered. He is more one with himself, and he's ready to sort of take on big challenges again. I think that that's completely smart storytelling, to sort of explain where he's been and to sort of launch him into a new path in the larger MCU. But in terms of what types of storylines we'll see him in, what type of iteration, what kind of Daredevil would we actually see? I believe it's definitely going to be a little different from Netflix's Daredevil character, the way he was written on that format. You might start to see more of a Mark Waid type of Daredevil, more of a Daredevil yellow type of carefree, charismatic, almost like a charming Clark Kent type of Matt, who, you know, he's had time to reset. You know, he's gotten away from Hell's Kitchen, Wilson Fisk, all of that stuff. He sort of let it all go. And so now that he's back in Kevin Feige's hands, I think as Daredevil fans, we're going to need to prepare ourselves for a more gentrified type of Daredevil character. I don't think he's going to be very similar at all to how he was in the Netflix shows. I definitely think that he is going to be very different, and I think that they will go in a different direction for the character. We need to be prepared to see a very different Matt Murdock, should he ever come back in the MCU proper. All right, so what I want to talk about now is the state of the rights. And there's a lot of stuff that we could start to see with Daredevil. I want to start to establish where he is now and what that can mean for him in the future. Starting with the cancellation of his show on Netflix, or even before that. So the rights to Daredevil was with 20th Century Fox. They're the ones who made the movie in 2003, with Mark Steven Johnson directing. And they had a certain amount of time to get a reboot in production. They did not meet that deadline, and so the rights reverted back to Marvel and to Kevin Feige. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to use Kevin Feige's name a lot, because I really – he's the CCO now. He's the chief creative officer. But he was definitely very powerful back then as well, as just sort of a monster producer of all of these films. And I do think that he wanted a lot of control, a lot of creative control. And I do think that he has a lot to do with what happened with Daredevil in the past. And he's going to have a lot to do definitely with Daredevil in the future. So I'm definitely going to be throwing his name around a lot. So what we saw with Kevin is we saw him get the rights to Daredevil back. Daredevil and all of his characters, Bullseye, Elektra, Kingpin, all of these characters all came back to Marvel, to Disney. And Kevin Feige said, you know, this is great that we got all these characters back, but what if we got Galactus for all this? Like, could you give us Galactus? You know, we can make it legitimate and just be like, I'll trade you the Daredevil rights, 20th Century Fox. You can have the rights back to Daredevil. Just give us Fantastic Four. And really all we want is Galactus. That's the only one that we want, really. And the deal didn't go through. And so Marvel kept Daredevil by default. And he was back in the House of Mouse. What Kevin Feige did after that is he kicked him down to Marvel Television. He gave him to Jeff Loeb and said, here, you can do something with the character. Now, I don't want to put a lot of blame on Kevin Feige here, because when it comes to Daredevil showing up on television or on streaming with Netflix, I do think that it was in a large part because Jeff Loeb really advocated for Daredevil, and it's very, very possible that he really wanted Daredevil to be the sort of centerpiece of this big Defenders contract that they had going with Netflix. I think that Jeff Loeb really, really pushed to have Daredevil. And so Kevin Feige said, all right, man, here you go. Have Adam. And lo and behold, Daredevil came to Netflix. So Kevin Feige has Jeff Loeb clamoring for Daredevil. Jeff Loeb really, really understood the value of the Daredevil character. I don't know if that sent off any signals or any alarm bells in Kevin Feige's head, but there should be a lot of alarm bells going off in Kevin Feige's head. Like, there are daily tweets to save Daredevil. Daredevil is the most critically acclaimed Marvel content anywhere, probably in the history of Marvel movies, television, anything in live action. Daredevil is at the top of critical acclaim. We've spent more time with Daredevil on screen than any other MCU character. It's just ridiculous, the track record that Daredevil has. But I think that Kevin Feige, as a former producer, looks at Daredevil, looks at the Daredevil movie and says, man, that movie didn't really make a whole lot of money. There's a lot of reasons for that. Definitely, I think anybody would say. But Daredevil, at the time, when the rights of Daredevil reverted back to Marvel, he definitely was a damaged IP in the public's eyes. It was just kind of a sour movie to a lot of people. And I think that he saw Daredevil on Netflix as sort of a proving ground and sort of a place where Daredevil can sort of repair his reputation and really sort of come on the mend. Now it's time to test him in the open market again. And what form that will take is completely up to Kevin Feige at this point. He has Daredevil now. And not only that, but he has 2 years to think about what he's going to do with him. And there's a lot of decisions in that. So I think that when you think about the character and what Kevin Feige might do with him next, the possibilities are endless. They are literally and utterly endless. Yeah, he could just sort of be the new Agent Coulson, to where he cameos here, he cameos there, and eventually he's in the Avengers or he's in his own show. You know, Mac could just sort of be laying low and we could just see Lawyer Matt for a good long time in all of these cameos. They could start up with the Daredevil television show again. He can get his own set of movies. He could just sort of be like Avengers alumni, kind of like how War Machine is, you know, to where he might be the sidekick of somebody else's, you know, movie franchise. And we see him in the Avengers, and that's where he gets, you know, little moments to shine. But he won't have his own storylines necessarily. He'll just sort of be a character in the thick of it, in the larger scheme of things. You know, the things that sort of come to mind, you know, would he get a suit redesign? You know, we definitely know that Netflix was sort of gearing to give Daredevil a suit update. But now are they going to have a completely new take on it, a completely new iteration of the Daredevil costume? You know, I said before, it looks consistent. It looks like it would fit in the MCU. But, you know, what is a Daredevil reboot going to look like? I mean, think about it. We've never had an in-house reboot before, you know. We've never had a character that was in the MCU doing their thing somewhere and then them still being in the MCU doing a different thing somewhere else in a different capacity in a completely different iteration. You know, we've never seen anything like that. The closest that we can reference is something like the Hulk, who's been recast. And there's been a few sort of quote-unquote in-house Marvel iterations where he had his own solo film in the very inception of the MCU. It was the second film that came out in the MCU. And since then, he was completely recast. His solo films were shut down, and he was just sort of Avengers alumni. But beyond that, we've never really seen a full-fledged show, a full-fledged complete set of material. And now we're going to see him in a different capacity. You know, that's never happened. We've never seen that before. So we're definitely going to be breaking new ground with where we see Daredevil next. It's going to be really interesting. You know, could they stick him in the larger MCU and sort of do, you know, could they incorporate a Superior Iron Man storyline for him? You know, to where he's just sort of a guest star here and there, and he's just sort of this sort of ragdoll, or this character that other characters sort of bounce ideas and ideologies and conflicts off of. You know, I think Daredevil could be a really good foil, to where he could sort of be that sort of darker, edgier character that kind of pokes holes in a lot of these other characters. You know, I see him going in a few different directions specifically. You know, he could definitely go the old route, you know, where they just pick up where they left off and continue Daredevil on the small screen in a new capacity, whether it's FX, whether it's Hulu, whether it's Disney Plus. They're already doing Moon Knight on Disney Plus, and you know, that could very, very well be PG-13 material. So it's not beyond the realm of comprehension that Daredevil could be on Disney Plus. I can't rule that out. I think a lot of people do, but this is Disney. This is Marvel. This is Kevin Feige we're talking about. If this is going to be under that larger umbrella, he's not ever going to exist outside of that. I mean, he very well could be as well. But Kevin Feige's objective here is to keep all of these main heroes. I mean, Daredevil's a very, very established Marvel character. He's been around for decades, and he's been a mainstay. You know, he's been in Defenders. He's been in Avengers. He's been in Marvel Knights. He's been in all of these sort of team-up characters that include all of these other characters that are in the MCU. So it doesn't make sense to kick him back out somewhere like Hulu or FX on an island all by himself, unless they wanted to sort of continue with the old route and continue with what they were doing before. But at this point, we really don't know if Jeff Loeb has a job still at Marvel. Probably definitely not as the head of Marvel Television. This is going to be Kevin Feige's call. And so I don't think that Daredevil is going to find himself outside of that main MCU umbrella ever again. So could we see him on Disney Plus or any of those other platforms? You know, there's a big community out there. There's the Save Daredevil community out there. Bring back season 4, or, you know, bring season 4 in. Bring the same cast in. There's a huge community out there like that. We just don't know, and we know Kevin Feige, he likes to recast things. Not all the time, necessarily. We saw that J. Jonah Jameson is played by the same actor as J.K. Simmons, but we just, the chances are really, really slim. When you think about the idea that Kevin Feige is going to want to wipe the slate clean, I really don't think that a Daredevil season 4 is going to come about. Now, Daredevil could continue in a brand new show, but it's not going to piggyback off of the Netflix shows. I just, company-wise, business-wise, you just don't want to do that. You don't want to harken back to a show that was on a competitor's streaming platform. They're just not going to do that. I'm sorry. I'm going to say it now. There's not going to be a Daredevil season 4. And to be honest, to me, it's not the worst thing in the world. You know, Eric Olson pitched Daredevil season 4 right before it got shut down. And to be honest, I'm pretty happy that we're not going to see Eric Olson do another season of Daredevil. You know, bring back the same cast. Charlie Cox, I think, was great. John Bernthal was great in Punisher. Vincent D'Onofrio, you know, is always expressing interest in wanting to come back in any capacity. Deborah Ann Woll hasn't been able to find work since Daredevil. But I do know that a lot of these actors have gone on to do different things, whether in short-term commitments to where they could come back or whether they are long-term commitments. It's going to be really hard. The longer that this goes on, it's going to be really, really hard to bring back the same cast. I don't necessarily want to see the same cast brought back. If Kevin Feige finds it in his heart to bring back Charlie Cox, I think that that'd be great. I think that Charlie Cox would be able to do Daredevil in the new iteration that they have. Vincent D'Onofrio as well. I mean, they could definitely bring them back. I think that they're good enough actors to where they can change the tone and roll with the new tone of the new Disney Daredevil. I definitely think that they could come back because, as far as I know, they're not in anything long-term. They're not really tied up in anything. They could be called up. We do know that Charlie Cox still has that clause to be in a Marvel movie should they ever call him up to the big leagues. And I'm pretty sure Vincent D'Onofrio has been in a ton of movies. He's a veteran actor. That's smart casting that they did for both of those characters. Yeah, I mean, why not bring them back? I mean, there's a huge, huge community of people who want to see them back. I sort of divorced myself from the people playing the characters, and I sort of look beyond that and see if the character is being portrayed correctly. And there's a lot of good actors out there. I'm with the rest of you. I really can't see anybody else wearing the horns other than Charlie Cox. But Kevin Feige, Marvel, they do great, great casting. And I think that if they want to go with a different actor, it's definitely going to be for business reasons and contract reasons. I definitely do think that Charlie Cox did a really, really great job as Daredevil. But we'll see. We'll see if he gets to audition for Daredevil again. I think it would be that way. I think that if he were to come back, it's not going to be a renegotiation of his contract. It's going to be a new contract, and he's going to have to audition again. He's going to have to impress Kevin Feige and the people working on whatever movie or show he's going to be involved in. And Daredevil is really going to have people that are really advocating for him the way that Jeff Loeb and Joe Quesada did. We're going to have people that really believe in the Daredevil character to really see him again somewhere in a really good Daredevil iteration. I just want you to know that now. He's going to have people that are working on these shows and on these movies to really, really believe in him and to really want to bring him in and to incorporate him. I don't know if there's a lot of people in Hollywood that are like that. But I do believe that there are some. So if you are a part of the Daredevil community, if you are a part of the Save Daredevil community, I've definitely seen those tweets and those daily tweets. I think it really says a lot to the higher-ups. But I want to say that we're not trying to convince Disney. We're not trying to convince Hulu or Disney Plus or FX to pick up Daredevil again. You know? Like, that's really a pipe dream. I think the correct way to go about this now is you're going to want to address filmmakers. You're going to want to address producers. You're going to want to address people who actually work in Hollywood, you know, writers, you know, those sorts of people. You're going to want to press them to sort of bring Daredevil about. I mean, I would book the Russo brothers, you know, instead of mentioning or tagging, you know, the networks, you know, mention the Russo brothers, mention Josh Whedon, mention these people who work in Hollywood who really have the green light to be able to make the movies that they kind of want to make and do whatever that they want to do. You know, if the Russo brothers slip into sort of producer roles, then they're definitely people that you want to address and get on your side or to get on Daredevil's side, but that's definitely my challenge to the Save Daredevil community, is to start pressing people, not networks, because, you know, again, to renew Daredevil in the same iteration, I just don't see it, because, like I said, I don't know if Jeff Loeb even has a job at Marvel anymore. He's definitely not in charge of Marvel Television in the same way that he was before. A lot of the actors have moved on to other projects, and it's just going to take a lot of new negotiating, getting the band back together, the team back together. And it's not going to be whole. It's not going to be completely the way that it was before. So if you're advocating so much to bring Daredevil back in the same capacity, then why not advocate for Daredevil to be brought about in a new iteration that happens to tie in with the movies? Or why not advocate for Daredevil to be in the movies, period? You know, I think that that's a not only a higher aim, but a smarter and a more likely aim than the Save Daredevil as it is right now, you know, in terms of what the agenda is. I think focusing on a new iteration and where he could end up, it would be more useful. And I think that that's more of a worthy cause. So Daredevil could go the X-Men route. So what we're hearing about the X-Men is that they want to introduce the X-Men individually in other people's franchises. So they're talking about bringing Storm in Black Panther 2, Rogue in Captain Marvel 2. Wolverine would have his sort of own films, smart move there. And Professor X is going to be introduced with the Illuminati. So it might be in sort of a cutscene, maybe in Doctor Strange or something like that. Wanda herself is going to be in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. And the reason why that's important is because that would sort of be probably one of the first times that we see a mutant in the MCU. And of course, Wanda has been there before, ever since Age of Ultron. But to sort of come out as a mutant, or to sort of be proclaimed as a mutant, would be a very, very new thing. And that would be the first time that we could see a mutant, you know, a mutant that can be announced as a mutant on screen in the MCU ever. So they want to do that with a lot of the X-Men, bring them all in individually. They'll pop up here and there in other people's trilogies or set of films, and then X-Men will sort of be in a tie-in event where they all sort of come together and, you know, they form the X-Men. So Daredevil could sort of be rolled out in a certain way to where he's just sort of second fiddle. The thing that's really great is that if we see him in somebody else's movie, he can be a lawyer. He could play the long game to where he's a lawyer for a few films, and then, you know, he sort of helps out with covert missions here and there. And then he can sort of start to be sort of full-fledged Daredevil the way that we know him to be. But throughout the whole duration, he's always somebody who can bring an opposing view and a challenging view to other heroes. I mean, just imagine if Daredevil was in an Avengers film And somebody like Captain Marvel was, you know, sort of the quote-unquote leader of the Avengers. You can definitely sort of see Daredevil as a lowly human, as a mere mortal, call Captain Marvel out for stuff and put her on the spot for things, just like he did with Luke Cage. You know, he stood up to Luke Cage in the Defenders. You know, he is a mere mortal, you know. Physically, he stands no chance of going up against Luke Cage, but he doesn't back down. You know, he's going to challenge the ideologies, and he's going to stand up for what he thinks is right. And that's something that he can do in any of these cameos. And so for him to be a sidekick or a second fiddle or to be a guest star in any one of these other movies, I think will just be a writer's dream, because he can definitely be sort of a dissenting point of view or a different point of view that sort of strengthens the main character of the show or the movie that he's in. So he could sort of do that, and then eventually he'll be the Daredevil that we know, and maybe he'll get, you know, his own film or set of films or his own show eventually over time. But for the time being, you stick him anywhere and you automatically have this sort of built-in drama of opposing views that I think will be just really great no matter where he's in. He can go the Falcon route to where he takes a long backseat as a sidekick. You know, he's just sort of in sync with who he's rolling with. He's very masterful at his craft, and he gets the job done on a mortal level. And eventually he sort of comes into his own with his own show. That's definitely something that we could see for him. You know, when you think of what's on the table for Daredevil, we are at a spot right now where Daredevil has to compete with a lot of other characters. Disney is just sitting on so many characters that they're trying to roll out all at once, with the Fantastic Four and the X-Men and all of the rest of the Defenders, including the Punisher, all the Marvel Knights characters, Ghost Rider, you know, characters like that are in their own sort of subdivision. There's so many characters that I think that they want to roll out. They're trying to juggle introducing all of these characters in sort of really smart and interesting ways. But they all sort of start with one character, right? The Avengers started with one character, and that was Iron Man. And by Iron Man 2, you had the Hulk, you had War Machine, and you had all of the other Avenger characters on the horizon. And so I think you can see characters like Blade, who's going to sort of be a pioneer for those darker MCU movies. And Moon Knight is going to sort of be the pioneer for darker characters, you know, on the TV side or on the small screen side. He's going to be on Disney Plus. So you're talking about all these characters that are coming down the pipeline. It's getting cluttered, and Daredevil really is going to have to fight for the screen time that he gets, no matter where he ends up. I mean, we may not see a whole lot of Daredevil. We might see Daredevil again very soon, but we might not see a whole lot of him. He might pop up here and there, and it might be just small little sample size bites that we get of him for a while, until everything sort of pans out and everyone's sort of established, and then you can start to see all these characters be fleshed out in a real and meaningful way. So we might get Daredevil in small doses, and that might be all that we get for a good long time. He could definitely go the Black Widow route, where he's primarily a guest star, and then eventually he gets his own solo film. This is interesting, because with Black Widow, what we saw is she took a really, really big backseat to the Avengers, and she was in Iron Man, she was in Captain America. She had a great relationship with the Hulk, and eventually now, after she's dead pretty much, after Phase 3 has concluded, now she's barely getting her own MCU film. It's sort of a weird way to do it, because it is sort of retconning. This is something that sort of takes place before Avengers Endgame. And so it's sort of this weird thing to where they're sort of going back and forth in time now. They're covering different stories from different times. And that could lead to a little bit of confusion. I know Black Widow, the movie, once it comes out, it could lead to even more confusion, because it's rumored that Black Widow will continue with a different actress, actually with her sister, because there's a scene where she's laying in the bed and there are lines around her face, maybe sort of indicating that she switched faces with her sister. So her sister is actually the one that died in Endgame, and not Black Widow herself. So that's probably the workaround for that. And it's also sort of rumored that Black Widow will get a trilogy, and that she'll at least get a sequel, and that it's already rumored that Daredevil, because he's had a long history with Black Widow in the comics, that he will guest star in Black Widow 2, if that should ever happen. So there's definitely a lot of talk for Daredevil being in Black Widow. There's definitely been a lot of talk of him being in Spider-Man. So he could definitely land as a guest star in films like that. And I think that would bode really, really well for him. Like I was saying, Daredevil has been on the mend, not only character-wise, but in terms of his IP reputation. You know, definitely didn't have a great solo outing with his film back in 2003. The film wasn't distributed in China, so you had a huge hit on the international box office potential. It was a film that went over budget and over time. It was delayed, and the editing was really choppy. The decisions that were being made were really, really last minute, and you had this sort of overbearing producer that wanted to change things. So it became sort of a nightmare of a film, and what we get is sort of a Frankenstein monster. I call it sort of like the greatest hits of Daredevil storylines, because it has a little bit of everything in there. But I think ultimately the Daredevil character shines through pretty well. It definitely shined through enough to make an impression on me, because that was when I really started to take Daredevil seriously as a character, and that's when my love for the character really began to grow. So the movie did its job, but in terms of box office success, you know, Kevin Feige looks at an IP like Daredevil and Elektra as well, because that had she had her own film as well, and he's looking at it and saying, look, man, this isn't going to do gangbusters. You know, I can't work with this. I can't put him out there. If he only made a marginal profit, and it really wasn't until after the DVD came out and the director's cut that came out, I think a year or two later, those DVD sales are really kind of what made the Daredevil movie worth it for the studio. They really made a lot of money off of those sales for the director's cut and for the theatrical cut, to where they were able to greenlight a spinoff in Elektra with a much smaller budget. They kind of understood what they were working with, what kind of IP they had. And so they adjusted the budget and what they would give them accordingly. And lo and behold, Elektra came to be. And that essentially killed off the IP. They were no longer excited about the Daredevil character at 20th Century Fox. And it eventually reverted back to Marvel and to Disney. So you kind of look at what Kevin Feige has in his hands, and he's saying, you know, well, I got Fantastic Four. I've got Galactus. I've got Doctor Doom. I have the entirety of the X-Men. I have mutants now. Yeah, I'm going to focus on that. So it's going to be really, really difficult for Daredevil to find his place in the MCU. And it might take a while. It might take longer than this holding period that we have with him. I think that when you kind of look at it, something like a Spider-Man 3 would have been, for the Daredevil character, I think it would have been a match made in heaven. I mean, I really, really can't overstate it enough. Like, if Daredevil was in Spider-Man 3, it just would have made, it would have made too much sense for him to go down that road. You know, you talk about Spider-Man being on the mend because he had a damaged IP as well. He was making less and less money at Sony with each subsequent Spider-Man film. He goes back to Marvel, and the sequel, Far From Home, becomes the first billion-dollar take for a Spider-Man film. It's never happened before. And to be honest, it should have happened a long time ago, because Marvel has had a few other films already that had a billion-dollar plus take home. You know, for these smaller Marvel characters, and Spider-Man is Marvel's most popular Marvel character, so he should have been a billion-dollar franchise a long time ago. But it wasn't until he came into the MCU that it finally happened. What better way to repair Daredevil's reputation than to put him in Marvel's most popular character's movie and expose him to the masses, expose him to little kids who've probably never heard of Daredevil? Parents aren't going to let their little kids watch the Daredevil Netflix show because it's too dark and bloody and long and all that sort of stuff. To introduce Daredevil in a new and reinvigorated way in a film like Spider-Man, like Spider-Man 3, it would have did gangbusters. I mean, you think about the storyline with Peter Parker. You know, he lost Uncle Ben, and then he lost Tony, and he sought comfort in his friendship with Quentin Beck. And that turned out to, he turned out to be the foil of the film. And so Peter is clamoring for a father figure. But I think now in Spider-Man 3, he's going to have this sort of coming of age story, to where he starts to become a man. And so he no longer needs a father figure. He needs a brother. He needs a sort of camaraderie, by a sort of older figure, by sort of a veteran hero. And that's Daredevil. That's Matt. Matt is definitely somebody who can mentor Peter. And that would fit story-wise. It's rumored that the Sinister Six will be a factor. Why not give Spider-Man a hero that he can team up with, So that way it's not 1-on-6. 2-on-6 are better odds. Say what you want about Charlie and Vincent. They're still suspiciously available. You know, Charlie Cox said recently that he hasn't been contacted about Spider-Man 3. He doesn't hold out hope for a Daredevil season 4 or for a renewal of the Daredevil show. He's just completely in the dark. He hasn't heard anything. But at the same time, he's still available. You know, if they called him up tomorrow, he would be on set the following week. You know what I mean? Like, Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio still suspiciously waiting. And I don't know if Charlie Cox is talking out of both sides of his mouth right now, because maybe he knows something that he's not saying. Maybe his agent knows something that they both know. Like, hey, like I heard from the Marvel executives, stay available. For these 2 years, just wait it out. Like, don't do anything long term. Don't do anything major. Just do short term stuff here and there. Stay available. So I don't know what to make of what Charlie Cox is saying, other than, you know, we'll see. We'll see if he's really kind of, if he really sort of believes this stuff, or if something is on the horizon that we don't know about that he does, or something that none of us know about, including himself. So we'll see. I mean, and you talk about Spider-Man in the MCU, we are really, really lucky that we're getting a Spider-Man 3, because negotiations almost fell apart between Sony and Marvel. So the next time that they have to negotiate a sharing agreement, it might not go so well. What better way to replace Spider-Man in the MCU? Because if the day comes where he's just gone, they couldn't reach a contract, he's going to be in the Sony films only now, and he's never going to cross over into the MCU films, into the Marvel Studio films, that's it. Spider-Man's done. What better way to replace a character like Spider-Man than with somebody like Daredevil? I mean, he can fit the role in a different way, in an interesting way. I've talked about it before, to where he could sort of stand up to these godlike figures, just as a mere mortal, and sort of bring a little bit of humanity to the larger MCU. What better way to do that than to set him up with Spider-Man before he gets called up to the big leagues? That was always my thought. The way that the timing is, Spider-Man 3 is going to go into production before the 2-year cooling off period is up. So the only way that Daredevil would be in that production schedule is if Marvel pays the money to buy out that sort of that cooling off period, and they could use them, essentially pay a penalty. But if they haven't done that already, then they're not going to do that, because they would have done it a long time ago if that was the case. Because he would have had to have been written into the script before they go into production. I think they're going to have production for Spider-Man 3 in July, which is in 2 months from now. So the Daredevil not going to be in Spider-Man 3, but he could be in Spider-Man 4. He could be somewhere else with Spider-Man. That's definitely something where, you know, there's always a possibility, because it's a bit of a crunch for Spider-Man 3. The timing just isn't there. But it would have been smart to use him with Spider-Man 3. It'll still be smart to use him in a future iteration or in a future Spider-Man installment. That doesn't go away. The reasons there are still legitimate. I mean, let's not forget that Daredevil is on the upswing. Not so great of a movie, but hugely, hugely critically acclaimed show. People want him back really, really bad, myself included. And if he shows up anywhere, it'll just be a huge, huge character redemption for him. And like I said, you can launch him into anything. When I say anything, it literally means anything. He could show up anywhere. And so my style of podcasting now, this is still the All About Daredevil podcast, but I'm going to be paying attention to the MCU as a whole, because I'm going to need to pay attention to everything that's going on. So that way I understand where Daredevil can show up next. So I may talk from time to time about different Marvel characters, different Marvel properties, but it's all in the service of where Daredevil could show up next. It's all in the service of you know, there's a Daredevil filter to everything that I'm going to say in the future. It's always going to come back to Daredevil. Daredevil is always going to be the reason why I bring up anything to you guys. And so, like I said, this is just a big wait and see game right now. There's a lot of rumors, and I'm doing my best to cut through all of the noise and to really bring about stuff that's concrete, because that helps me determine what we can really go off of, and that helps me with my predictions, and that helps me be the Daredevil prophet that I am. So I definitely thank you for continuing on this journey with me. I've been seeing those continuing downloads of my podcast episodes. Definitely go back and listen to those. You can get a lot of mileage out of those episodes. Some of the stuff that I've talked about 2 years ago sort of still applies in a lot of ways to today. And it's just been a really, really great journey that I've been on. If you want to connect with me more, follow me at Ultranova05 on Twitter. I'm most active there when it comes to Daredevil stuff. And I will see you guys on the other side. One last thing before I go. I know that this is the first episode since season 3 has come out, and I know that I haven't really given my thoughts about it. I just don't think that I want to touch that really. This was already a really long episode, and it was a really long journey to get back into the swing of things. Plus, I just think that season 3 kind of sucked.